This is the BBC.
This podcast is supported by advertising outside the UK.
Across Northern Ireland, on your radio and on BBC Sounds. This is
the Stephen Nolan Show.
It's all about money today on the Nolan Show after the executive have voted through a budget which the Health Minister, Robin Swan, in that executive have voted against. Swan says that that budget, if it is what actually is given to the health service, will mean risk to life. He says cancer patients, vulnerable elderly people will suffer. So just where are we at in terms of what are we facing with public services in the coming year? Is there a political solution? Are there tough decisions, tougher decisions that need to be made or not? All coming up on this important show this morning.
The Stephen Nolan Show!
Good morning and thank you very much indeed for joining me this morning. Very important programme today and a very important programme for you. The citizens of this country to feed into it and for your voices to be heard. They promised us the game-changing move that Stormont would be able to deliver for the people of Northern Ireland. Now, there's a political reality. There is massive pressure on the budget that has been allocated to Northern Ireland for all of the services that you need. One of the questions is, should they have gone back into Stormont in the first place with the money that was being offered from the British government? Should they have held out or not for more? Would they have got more if they had held out? But to a certain extent, that's a question of the past because we are where we are. And we are now facing a situation where the budget that is being proposed for the health service in Northern Ireland has led the Health Minister, Robin Swan, to declare, to hit the emergency button, essentially. He is warning that vital services like cancer care, vital services for the most vulnerable in our society, will be reduced significantly. He is warning that people might die. And he is accusing the DUP, Sinn Féin and the Alliance Party, who have voted through this budget, of breaking their promise to the people of Northern Ireland. He has said that they promised that we would prioritise health. The Health Minister, Robin Swan, spoke to me this morning and I began by asking him to spell out what he thinks the impact of this proposed budget will be on all of us.
Stephen, if the budget allocation that has been proposed is actually accepted, that means I don't have a provision for pay settlements for next year. It means we'll actually have to restrict the use of new drugs or new therapies that could be approved elsewhere across Great Britain that we don't have the money to pay for. Those waiting list initiatives that you and I spoke about last, you know, the additional monies to do that work outside our core budget, isn't there. That allocation isn't there in regards to this settlement that has been proposed. Reducing some of our GP services, high impact on our trusts, and you know, that looks at how we'd actually be looking at the reduction of domiciliary care provision as well as some independent sector care home beds.
Let me walk through some of that. You say you don't have the money for the pay increases next year. These are pay increases that have already been given. Are you suggesting that if you do not get the budget minister, that you would have to contemplate cutting pay?
No, Stephen, sorry. This is monies for any pay award that will be given next year. So if you remember when we came back at the start of this year, Department of Health, we received an additional £551 million out of the settlement deal. £417 million of that was actually to honour last year's pay award. So this is about what we would be looking at to actually give us a pay award this year.
So we're looking at, in your view, a cut in care packages for elderly people, for the most vulnerable in our society. That's one of them, right?
Yes.
But what would happen to those elderly people?
Well, they don't get the care packages. You know, I've been dealing with our domiciliary care sector quite intensively over the last couple of months, because one of the things when I came into this post said I wanted to prioritise primary care and domiciliary care, and we were making great progress, and we still are. In regards, the more that we want to do, there's more work that we want to do there, make that system actually deliver more, being able to deliver more packages. It needs money to do that. So we won't be able to do that. So those care packages will not be there.
So what will happen to them? What will happen to those people?
Those people will be left without that package. So we may see them actually spending more time in hospital. We may see them going home without a full care package as well. But that's at the stage, Stephen, if this budget goes through as it was proposed yesterday, and the Department of Health have to make those cuts to service that it actually means.
In terms of the medicines that are available for us here in Northern Ireland, are you saying there will then be a distinct difference between medication available across the water and here? We won't be able to afford to buy it?
Well, that's the thing. When we actually see new drugs, new therapies coming online, when they get released to the market, we accept the same approval mechanisms across the UK, but at the end of the day, we actually have to purchase them as a system. So if we can't afford, new medicines are always a bit more expensive because they are, you know, they're new, they're cutting edge, all the rest of it. We may not be in a position to actually be able to provide those to patients here in Northern Ireland.
So there'll be
a difference to access.
How would this budget, which has been voted through, how would this, by the executive, how would this budget affect cancer care?
Stephen, what do you want to say? You know, and why we're still here, why we're still making these arguments, this budget, although it has went through the executive, it's not a done deal. I still believe it's in the power of the executive and the party leaders to say, look, we need to take another look at this. It's still in the power of the Assembly actually to demand that as well. You know, and I think we could look at this budget actually collectively, and we should have been looking to decide on top strategic priorities, actually scrutinise all the bids and allocations that come in together as an executive, instead of actually receiving a budget paper that we had to vote yes or no to.
Nevertheless, it has been voted by the executive, by the big parties, the Alliance Party, the DUP and Sinn Féin. And we'll get into that in a moment. In terms of cancer care, how would this budget affect cancer care? I'm trying to make this as real as possible for real people.
Well, look, Stephen, again, it goes back to the conversation that you and I had the last time about our waiting list initiatives. What we wanted to do, and you know, we wanted to put that additional money into additional projects or cross-border scheme that we've used in the past actually to reduce waiting lists. Where I'm looking at now, we received $34 million in part of that settlement deal for waiting lists. Where I'm going to have to target that money now to is actually to our red flags. You know, what we would, you know, the need for that red flag, urgent cases that we'd have to step forward, we have to bring forward. Last year, my department spent between £75 and £80 million actually delivering our red flag services alone. So we were trying to get that money baselined into this year's budget. I believe now that $34 million that was earmarked for waiting lists will now be used for red flags. So I am going to be able to keep that going.
So waiting lists will continue to go up?
Waiting lists will continue to go up under this allocation, yes.
How bad is this?
Look, Stephen, this is bad enough that I, as a health minister, couldn't support it in the executive yesterday. If, you know, the easy thing would probably be to say, yes, this is collective, this is the hard decision that we all have to make. But hand on heart, as a health minister, I couldn't put my hand up to this yesterday, because I left it out to executive members, I've highlighted to the health committee now as well, what I believe that this reduction in our allocation actually means.
And it means, in a sentence?
Well, it's a reduction of service. It's not even... No, I come in to this position, I said this year was going to be about stabilisation. This reduction in allocation actually makes stabilisation challenging.
Why did your party, why was your party screaming from the rooftops that the offer from the government of the $3.3 billion was enough to go back in? If clearly it wasn't.
Because, Stephen, if we hadn't went back in, that money wasn't there. No, if we were still sitting without an executive, without assembly, that $3.3 billion. So the allocations that we actually got to close out last year in regards to that $551 million that health got for those pay awards and to balance off those overspends, that money wouldn't have been there.
But the political reality was the calculation you made was that you weren't going to ask the British government for more money before you went back in. Your leader, Doug Beattie, said the $3.3 billion offer from the government was a good financial package. Does it feel good today?
And Stephen, it was where we needed to get the executive back. And we always said that the best place to make these arguments was within the executive, within the Northern Ireland Assembly.
Well, that's being tested now, isn't it? So here you are, you're back in the Assembly. Any sign of more money from the British government?
Well, look, and I take note in regards to what our First and Deputy First Minister are saying. You know, this gives us, now that we have a settled budget that was agreed by the executive, so they can go back to Treasury. I take the other stance. In regards to that now we have a settled budget, and British Treasury may actually say, well, you've settled your budget, you've done your budget, go and deliver it now.
Well,
live within your means. Well, what I'm saying...
And they could quote your leader saying this was a good financial package for Northern Ireland.
And it was a good financial package to get the Assembly and the Executive back in so that we could have local ministers making local decisions. The decision that was made yesterday, I believe, in regards to the allocation for health, is not a good one.
Okay.
And that's why I take that position.
And Robin, it's about... reality now. There is a finite amount of money. The executive had to make a decision yesterday, given the amount of money they have, as to where that money would be allocated. And you're essentially saying that the health service is on the point of some of the services being on the point of collapse, right? So where would you take the money from? Where did they go wrong yesterday? You voted against the budget. Where should the money have come from to give more to you?
And Stephen, that's the conversation that I believe should have been had more strategically around the executive table than where it was yesterday in regards to simply a budget paper coming and saying this is it, yes or no. So there was nothing about the priorities of a collective executive in regards to how this is. Where I see, you know, and I've heard the language, you know, everybody didn't get what they wanted. So therefore, everybody should be content that they didn't get what they wanted. What I'm saying is, from my point of view, as the Minister of Health, who represents the health service, who represents the people who need our health service, who represents the people who work in our health service, this isn't enough. So I think when the executive says, and actually said prior to its re-establishment, that health was going to be a priority, I think it should have meant that. And if it didn't mean it, it should have delivered on it. But and we should have been prioritising waiting lists.
But it's a pretty damning accusation you're making. You're essentially saying that those parties, the DUP, Sinn Féin, Alliance Party, who voted for this yesterday, have broken their promise to the public to prioritise health. That's essentially what you are saying. So it is a fair question back. And how can you, with any credibility, after making that accusation, be credible if you're not saying where they should have taken the money from to give to you?
But
so
Stephen,
where would you take it from, Robin?
Stephen, I think there has to be a collective responsibility in regards to where we reallocate.
But what would your view be, where it should come from?
Stephen, I'm not getting into a bidding war with other departments. I didn't get there yesterday. I wasn't given enough information getting into this executive as to how other departments had prioritised their bids, what it actually meant to them as a service. You know, we've heard highlights as well. I'm, as Health Minister, saying that the allocation that I was given yesterday is not enough to deliver
health
service.
How is this credible? How is this mature politics in Northern Ireland? They've broken their promise, you say, but you won't even start the conversation as to where that money should come from. And you're in a political party that described the amount of money they have as a good financial package. Here's your leader. Here's what he said.
The financial package, I have to say, and we've still to do the detailed numbers on it, but it's a good financial package of $3.3 billion, but a lot of it's front loaded for the first 2 years, which really does give us a bit of financial firepower if we get an executive up and running again. And we do need the executive up and running so we can provide for the people.
So that executive is now up and running. Where, Minister, if you wanted that executive to prioritise the money, should it come from?
Stephen, and that's a conversation I still believe should be had and could still be had.
Could you contribute to
the executive table? I will contribute to it.
So
yes.
Where should it come from?
But I'll contribute to it, Stephen, around the executive table.
Did you contribute to it yesterday? Because I've been briefed by someone from within that meeting yesterday that you were asked and you did not offer one suggestion where the money should come from. Is that true?
Well, Stephen, if that's what the proposal in the briefing you were given from an executive meeting, they'll also say that I put the case for the health service, as I should as the health minister.
But is it true that you didn't make any suggestions when asked?
Well, look, I was given a final paper, and it was a paper you could either vote yes for or no for. There was no discussion around the table. There was no strategic approach. There's no programme for government that has actually set out the priorities for the Northern Ireland Executive as to how the money could be spent strategically. We keep talking about working across government, working across different departments. That's not what I see in this budget.
Do you think, Robin, given where we are with this budget, where you're all saying there clearly isn't enough money, do you think part of the rethink within that executive, if that's what you're calling for, should be a rethink on revenue-raising measures which have already been ruled out? Should it be looked at again?
Well, Stephen, what we actually have seen over the last period of time is different ministers ruling out revenue-raising measures without the decision or the conversation being had around the executive table. And I think my party leader has also made that. That's why he has asked for party leaders to meet shortly to talk about those issues in regards to this budget allocation, now it's actually working out. He'd written to them a number of weeks ago asking to have a meeting, strategic meeting about what the budget was actually going to mean.
You made the point earlier, Minister, that this is not through yet. Essentially, the executive have voted for this, but the Assembly could block it. Can I be clear? The vote will go to the Assembly. Are you calling on the Assembly to block this budget?
I'm calling on the Assembly to strategically review this budget, what it will mean. When it goes to different stages of the debate, I think they should be looking at what can be amended, what can be changed, because that's what I'll be doing as Health Minister. I, in all honesty, in all consciousness, cannot vote for this budget in its current form. I didn't vote for it yesterday in the Executive. I'll not be voting for it when it comes to the Assembly unless it's changed.
Will your party vote against this in the Assembly if it's not changed?
Yes.
And your leaders told you that?
In this current form, our party will not be supporting this budget.
And will you walk from the executive? How could you stay in the executive if your party was voting against an executive decision?
And Stephen, that's where the other parties will look, I'm sure, to the Ministerial Code and the Code of Conduct in regards to my actions at that time. Our party will make a call at that stage. If there isn't a constructive engagement on the prioritisation of health that we were promised, that the people of Northern Ireland were promised before this executive was re-established.
And finally, do you think you've broken your promise to people in Northern Ireland in terms of, to be fair to you, you were a very popular health minister, you brought a lot of credibility to you being in that position, and you're walking away from it for an MP aspiration. How much do you care about health if you're walking away from it at this critical time?
I do care about health, Stephen. I come back into this position, but let me be clear. This isn't about me. This isn't about a personality.
That's what politics is.
An individual.
It's absolutely about you and your reputation as a health minister.
Politics, in my belief, politics should be about the people. You work for the people you represent, and to me, that's the health service and the health service workers. And I sit in this position as an Ulster Union.
And given the dire situation,
the policies that I present, the directions that I take and the way I deliver my role is that of an Ulster Unionist.
And given the dire situation the health service could be in, will you reconsider walking away?
Stephen, I think one of the things that Northern Ireland actually needs now as well are MPs in Westminster who can actually articulate the true situation of our health service in Northern Ireland. And if I'm elected as an MP in Northern Ireland, that's the fight that I'll be taking to where it should be.
Robin Swan, thank you very much indeed. Thank you, Minister. So that's the Health Minister setting out a dire future for the health service if this budget, which has been voted through by the executive, remains in place. He's doing more than that, though. He's accusing the three big political parties, the Alliance Party, Sinn Féin and the DUP, of breaking their promise to the electorate. Stephen Farry is the deputy leader of the Alliance Party. Have you betrayed the people in promising before that executive went back up and running, Stephen, that health would be a priority? That's what Swan's saying you're doing.
No, Stephen, I mean, health is a priority, make no mistake in that regard. But ultimately, we have to stand up and govern here. I mean, Northern Ireland's been without government for the past 2 years, and that itself has seen massive damage to Northern Ireland, more and more scarring. And we've now a situation where the executive returning into what is an unprecedented financial crisis, not just from that scarring, but underfunding from Westminster in terms of our level of need. And also, I have to say, failures in the past to engage in proper transformation and make our services much more efficient and effective. But we are where we are now. I mean, the numbers don't lie. I mean, they are what is available to the executive, and the decision has to be taken in terms of that budget. And if we don't take a decision in terms of a budget, then we have no government. We go back to a situation where we're ruled by the UK government. We may see elements of the financial package that was secured falling away, and we won't have a sympathetic ear to actually do those negotiations for that wider financial package based upon or change the financial formula based upon need.
Was it really that important? Was the desperation to get Stormont up and running again, the timing of it, a wise decision? Your leader, Naomi Long, said, to be fair to Naomi, she said the £3.3 billion package offered by the Secretary of State was not enough. She absolutely said that. But she then said also that a reformed executive should accept it. She said, I think we're looking a gift horse in the mouth here by refusing to actually grasp that money and bank that money at this stage. Should you all have held out for more money?
Well, Stephen, two things in that regard. I mean, Stormont should never have been down. We didn't support it being down, and we had no preconditions
for it. 3.3. Well, should you have had?
Because in all situations, Stephen, Northern Ireland's better off having an executive and assembly in place.
Does it feel like that today with the cuts you're implementing on people?
And frankly, the financial package we secured could have also been negotiated in the context of a sitting executive. We didn't need the drama and the brinkmanship around the Windsor framework to get us to that point. But there is a wider discussion that we have to have now in terms of the fiscal framework for Northern Ireland, that formula for need. And we can't progress that with the Treasury if we don't have a budget in place. And Stephen, it's worth also pointing out, the budget should actually be struck before the start of the financial year. We're now towards the end of April, and we're in a situation where public services and all those voluntary groups, the NGOs, etc., that depend upon government finance, they need to know clarity what's happening with their finance. So they can plan, and particularly in a situation where we're facing really challenging situations, you need as much time as possible to plan ahead to make the best use of what's available.
But your party and the DUP and Sinn Féin, you have voted through a budget yesterday. And the allocation to health within that budget that you have supported means, according to the health minister, cancer care patients not getting the treatment that they need, elderly people at home without care packages that they need, and people potentially dying. That's what you've voted through.
And Stephen, I absolutely recognise this is an incredibly challenging situation for health. We know that demand for the health service is going up, and budgets need to rise in line with healthcare inflation to maintain a steady state. But also, there are other demands in terms of our public services across the board, and indeed many of those actually play in to health. I mean, health outcomes don't purely depend on what happens in terms of Department of Health spending. I mean, for example, if we are to see a reconfiguration in terms of how our health estate operates, we are going to have to see proper investment in terms of public transport to make sure people have accessibility. If we end up cutting TransLink's budget, that's going to set that back. One of the main drivers in terms of health is around people's ability to access education, job opportunities, what happens in terms of the justice system. So we have to think of this in terms of a whole system. And that's why a proper programme for government becomes very important, because you want to drive better health outcomes. Other departments do come into play in that particular regard. So you can prioritise health, but you shouldn't see it necessarily through one lens of the Department of Health spending.
Stephen, this budget is not fully through yet. The process is the executive you have voted for it. It now goes to the Assembly. Would you judge ill of anyone within your party who was voting, or any other party, who was voting in that assembly vote. And their conscience would not allow them to support a budget and therefore vote for a budget where there is a cancer patient who's not getting the care they can get, where there's an elderly person sitting at home without a care package that they need. Would your party discipline anyone or feel ill against anyone within your party who voted against that budget for those reasons?
Well, it's important that parties operate in a coherent manner, but we also respect, I mean, people are there with a mandate, and I mean, the Assembly does provide an important scrutiny role in all of this, and there are obviously questions to ask. I mean, our party isn't thrilled with this budget. I mean, and even in the context of where we are today, I mean, there's things we think that could be done better. I mean, for example, in terms of capital, we're unhappy with the prioritisation of the school campus in Oma. We don't believe that is the most efficient use of resources. We don't believe that that's value for money. We would like to see much more emphasis upon early intervention and prevention in terms of how we fuel demand in terms of our public services. We're very conscious that we have a divided society, and we're still spending hundreds of millions of pounds every year in trying to manage that situation that needs to be unlocked. We're not seeing transformation happening quick enough in terms of education and indeed in health. We have to say, with respect to Robin Swan, I mean, he has not driven, and we have not yet seen in this mandate, a proper plan in terms of how health can be changed so we can actually spend money more efficiently and effectively. So Stephen, we're spending more on health per capita than any other part of these islands, and we have the worst outcomes. So there's fundamental questions there that people have identified over many years that simply haven't been tackled. We've been talking transformation and health for the best part of a decade, and the dial hasn't moved in that in any respect. So that is frustrating.
For me to be clear, Stephen, and I know you're pushed for time, but for me to be clear, because these are life and death matters. You said there that the Assembly and your members within the Assembly have an important function to do within our democracy. So would your party give the freedom to the members of your party to vote on their conscience, given these life and death matters within the Assembly,
something like this, it can't be a free vote. I mean, the budget is something that goes right to the heart of a coherent government. But our Assembly members have an important role in asking questions, both on the floor of the Assembly and in their respective committees. And in particular, what happens now is that each minister takes away their envelope, and they in turn will have to make decisions inside their department as to how they prioritise, what's allocated to them, and how they drive forward reform and transformation. So we have to ask the question in terms of the big picture as to where we are today. What is the alternative? We believe we have to stand up and govern and get on with it. Still make the case for doing things better as we go forward.
Would you recontemplate revenue raising measures that have been shut down?
Well, Stephen, there is an obligation on the executive over 2 years now to consider 130 million.
It's a drop in the ocean compared to.
It is.
So, would you reconsider water rates?
Well, Stephen, that's a much bigger conversation. You know our position about no new water charges, what we can do things.
Would you reconsider it?
In water. Well, Stephen, I think it's important to bear in mind that those measures won't actually be of any assistance this financial year, even if the decision was taken tomorrow to do water charges or tuition fees.
And finally,
the lead-in time on those is several years. They're not actually viable options for our current situation.
I have two brief questions. I know you need to go.
Sure.
So the next question is this. If you listen carefully to that Robin Swan interview, he said that he is confident that the other political parties will look at the rules around code of conduct if his party and him as an executive minister vote against this budget. Now, he's voted against the budget in the executive. I was then asking him about his party voting against it in the assembly. Do you think the UUP could stay in the executive and vote against this?
Well, look, we're not seeking to push Rotten or the Ulster Unionist Party out of the executive. That's for them to explain. I would say, in terms of the ministerial code, I mean, Robin is clearly, I think it's self-evident he's currently in breach of that. The enforcement around
how
that
is he in breach of it?
Well, he's actively opposing decisions of the executive as an executive minister.
He's so asking you to rethink. And he's saying you've broken your promise.
Yeah, well, he's actively campaigning against an executive decision. Now, look, I mean, I appreciate this is an incredibly difficult situation, and I mean, I don't think we're in a situation of confrontation around that particular point. I mean, this is a highly charged situation that we find ourselves in. It's important that people have that space to reflect and work through how people are going to manage all of this. But we've had a situation in the past where we've seen executives collapse into public bickering between ministers, and that has impeded our ability to deliver good governance. And particularly in an even deeper crisis, it's important that the executive can hang together and operate in a coherent manner.
Okay. Stephen, my final question is the vote. We've discussed why you voted for it. We've heard you. You're saying it's the reality of politics. It's the reality of the money that you've got. But as we look forward here, if the budget that you voted for goes through, do you think people will die because of those cuts?
Stephen, we are in an incredibly difficult situation where immense pain is happening right across our society due to a lack of resources. So we are seeing people in the health service really suffering, and obviously what you said is a consequence of that. You heard what the Chief Constable said yesterday in terms of what has happened to a police officer in relation to pressures on him or her, and that is an absolutely tragic situation. We see every day, and you've articulated this on your programme very well, in terms of challenges, in terms of special educational needs. We are seeing life-changing implications right across our society, which is why it's so important we get our budget situation fixed and fixed soon. But we are where we are today, and we have to have something in place in which we can build and go and make an argument to the Treasury for a better deal.
Stephen Farry, thank you very much indeed. Thank you, Stephen. Our business economics editor, John Campbell, with us this morning. Good morning to you, John.
Good morning.
So today's news discussion is about health. The reality is here, John, if you look at just one other department, and you could look at them all, education, given's hundreds of millions short of what he wants to do, is every minister.
Pretty much, yes. The finance minister was clear that no department got everything they asked for. Now, we should be clear that extra money has come in to the budget. So if you look at the best comparative figure for the amount of cash which has been distributed yesterday, it was up almost 7% compared to last year. So up from about $13.5 billion to just under $14.5 billion. But the big factor there is the extra money which came in from the UK government as a one-off to get the executive back into place. And a lot of that money is just going to be used to fund the pay deals. So again, if you look at the departmental totals, the biggest uplift is the Department for Education, and which sees its budget rise by 11.5% in cash terms compared to its opening position last year. But that really just reflects the fact that the Department for Education has finally agreed a pay deal with teachers, and that needs to be backdated over multiple years. So that is why they get that big uplift. So if you were to sort of look at those percentage changes in a, you know, without knowing the context, you think, oh well, everybody got lots of extra money. But all that extra money is doing is covering the pressures which had built up over the last number of years. And all the ministers and their officials have been clear in the run-up to this budget that they are still facing a very difficult financial environment. Because if you just, you know, think that over the last 2 years, departments have overspent. So if they are to get themselves, if you like, back on the financial straight and narrow where they won't overspend, that is going to mean they're going to have to run a very tight ship both this year and next year.
John, Robin Swan, the direct comparative between how much money, because what happens is, as a minister, you're allocated a certain amount of money at the beginning of a financial year. And then I think it's called in monitoring rounds, is it? That during the year, you're then given more money.
Yeah.
But it's a statement of fact that Robin Swan's been given more money this year, about 6% more this year at the beginning of the year compared to the beginning last year. Is that right?
Yeah. So the two comparisons here are, if you look in the Department of Finance figures, it basically tells you what the opening position was at the start of last year, which was just under 7.3 billion for day-to-day spending in health. The opening position for this year is just over 7.7 billion. So that's an increase of 6.3%. What Robin Swan says is, no, you need to look at what I actually spent last year. What was my outturn? Because the amount that you have at the start of the year can change by the end of the year as additional money comes in. And he says, when you look at what I actually spent, and then you look at that my starting position this year, the difference between the end of last year and the start of this year is that I'm down by more than 2%. Now, it is possible that health will receive more money during the course of this year, either through those monitoring rounds where you reallocate funds from other departments, although those monitoring rounds, I would suggest, are going to be very tight this year, or that there's additional spending which the UK government does in year, which gives extra money potentially to health. Maybe he will make up more money during the year, but that is by no means certain.
Is it possible the British government is going to give us more?
Well, the aim from the negotiation which is happening between the Department of Finance and the Treasury is that ultimately we should get a more generous funding arrangement, one which would meet what is referred to as Northern Ireland's objective level of need based on the shape of our population. But that is unlikely to bear fruit for a considerable period of time, if it does bear fruit at all, and will also be a deal, a multifaceted deal, which would have to involve revenue raising, financial sustainability, maybe devolution and more taxation powers. So that's a way off. What we would be relying on in the interim is just that the UK government does more public spending, and that means that we automatically get more money through what's known as the Barnett formula. Now, the Conservative government is clear it doesn't intend to do more public spending. It has plans which many analysts would see as unrealistic public spending cuts if they were to win the next election. What the Labour government does is less certain. I suppose traditionally you would expect a Labour government to spend more, as the Blair government did when they came in. They spent a lot more in the health service. But this Labour Party is not making many pledges in that direction. Okay.
John Campbell, thank you very much indeed. I'm asking that question of John as to whether we're likely to get more money from the British government. Because one of the questions, as you know, that I've been asking these politicians today is, did they do actually a good negotiation before they went back in to Stormont? Should they have held out more? Should they have leveraged more the British government's desire for there to be local government here again and got more money? So let's remind you of how confident the DUP were of getting more money when they decided to go back in. Should they have held out longer? The man that sat up opposite me just a number of months ago now, arguing strongly that they were confident of getting more money from the British government and that it was the right time to go back in, was Sir Geoffrey Donaldson. Let's have a listen.
The 3.3 billion is there, but we need more. And why do we need more?
Have you any leverage to get more?
I will explain. Because
you're back in.
No, Stephen, we're not yet back in, and that's why
so
today.
Could you not be back in tomorrow?
That is why today we are agreeing those priorities and communicating that to the government. And here's the reason why, because what the government has offered as part of the package is to cover public sector pay awards for 1 year only.
Exactly,
and that is about £650 million. We do not have that money for next year or the year after, Stephen. So we will be committed, and quite rightly so, to giving a pay award to our public sector workers, but we don't have the means in the next 2 years. The government know that needs to be resolved. There have been discussions already with the Treasury. There are meetings with the Secretary of State taking place.
Today?
And we need that to be resolved. Well, the party leaders are meeting today to consider the response from the Secretary of State.
But just help me understand, that money is so important, for example, for waiting lists.
That's why the DUP at Hillsborough said,
why didn't you stay out until you nailed the recurrent funding?
Because
what was the rush?
Because, Stephen, we've been having those discussions in parallel, and I believe we've now got the government to a place where they recognise there is a shortfall.
Okay.
What we're doing today as party leaders is sitting around a table and agreeing what those priorities are so that the government can then see that the extra money they are going to allocate to us that we have determined how that money should be spent.
Well, the proof in the pudding of your judgment to do that will be, will you get more than the $3.3 billion?
I believe we will.
So there it is. From the then leader of the DUP, obviously not the leader anymore, but it was the DUP position. They believe they will get more money. So, and that there was a parallel process going on. Now, part of that big negotiation was happening with Gavin Robinson as well, now the leader of the DUP. So straight question to the DUP, you promised the people there was a parallel process going on when you told them you were going back in. Your then leader at the time said that he believed we would get more money. Where is it? Because now we're in the situation where we desperately need that more money. So where is it, Gavin? And obviously, we'll see how the DUP respond to that now. Sean and Enniskillen. Morning, Sean.
Morning, Stephen. I hope this is just a political tactic to extract more money from Westminster. I hope that they're just trying to highlight to Westminster how difficult our situation is here. But unfortunately, I don't think it is. I've heard Robin Swan get hammered this morning.
Well, in what way was he hammered now?
He was basically blamed for not doing his job. And Robin Swan, from what I understand, listening to all the programmes, he was presented with a budget. Now, what do you expect a man to do if he's presented with a budget?
He was presented by a budget which was from a pot of money which his leader, Doug Beattie, described at the time as a good deal for Northern Ireland.
It was a good deal for Northern Ireland. You heard the former leader of the DUP saying, it was a great deal. Look at what we've done.
Donaldson said there was a parallel process and he was confident there was more money to come. Have we seen a penny of the more money?
No, we haven't. But we've heard Stephen Farrey not answering the question that you put to him. When you asked him, will people die? Do you believe people will die? Stephen Farrey said, we're in a desperate situation. Well, and basically what he was saying was, suck it up. This is what you've got. Deal with it. Now,
well, he would object to you summarising what he said.
Well,
like,
it's a summary.
Like
it is a summary. But that's basically what he was saying. We're in a desperate situation.
Let's talk about the other obvious elephant in the room here, Sean. And it is this. Once again, there is a distinction, and there will be a huge distinction here in all of these government departments between the working class and those who can buy themselves private services. So you look at health being the obvious example. People with money will buy themselves over, off these waiting lists, which are now predicted to continue to rise. For those elderly people who do not have money, they, the health minister is predicting, will be sitting at home without social care. Those with money can buy it privately.
Stephen, who represents us in Westminster? Four parties. Four parties have a voice in Westminster. How many of those MPs spoke up for increasing our budget here?
Sean, thank you for your call today. Rory O'Kane is the former SLP Director of Communications. Rory, good morning to you.
Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning. Your former party, the SDLP, were also shouting from the rooftops about how we needed Stormont up and running again. Did they assess the budget, do you think? Did they look at how much money was on offer? Did they think that they should have been helping to leverage more money for Northern Ireland?
I think with regards to the SDLP, obviously the public put them into opposition, and I think perhaps they have an easier station on this one, although I do think they're not without responsibility either. I think the first thing is to acknowledge the difficulties and the financial challenges that the executive is facing. But I do think what we are seeing now is that the fatal flaw in whether it's sustainable to have an economic policy that seems to be based on beg, borrow or blame the British government. And I think that in the what's the priority now for certainly like an opposition party like the SDLP is not only to point out where they think things are going wrong, but also to provide the alternative. And what we've seen here today, and perhaps not, it's not uncommon to have these budget rows and discussions that we've seen over numerous years. But also, I think it's time for the Assembly to step up, as perhaps Robin Swan suggested earlier, because essentially the executive should be accountable to the Assembly, not the other way around. And what we've also seen in the past when we've had these discussions is there's been a very much a defensive mindset by the executive ministers when anybody does seek to challenge budgets where parties get accused of threatening the institutions, etc. And that, and I think there should be a much more mature debate given the challenges and potential consequences of a budget that we're facing.
Obviously, the MLAs will be whipped when this comes to a vote in the Assembly. Do you think the responsible thing in terms of health, Rory, would be for those individual politicians to vote based on what they believe in? If it is a matter of life and death as we go forward here, or do you think they must support the collective position?
I think it'll be very difficult for certainly the MLAs from Sinn Féin to UP and Alliance to defy the whip or defy what their ministers have. And I think especially for the UUP, I mean, again, we've seen this before where ministers have voted against at the executive table and the parties have voted against in the Assembly. But I think what you can see and what you can predict, as if it stays as it is, you will see obviously SDLP voting against, Independents voting against, and probably also Unionist Party. But again, what is the role of the Assembly? They're not there to be cheerleaders for the executive. I mean, is there ways they can challenge? What is the Finance Committee doing? Is there a case for a Budget Scrutiny Committee? Because what concerned me from the comments I've heard today, and certainly from the Minister, is they all seem to just throw their bids into a lucky bag and they were then pulled out. There seemed to be no collective discussion as to what the priorities were, and I think knowing what the priorities were.
Well, Swan saying that the priority they told the public was health.
Yeah, and that's a simple message to convey. But what the executive haven't been able to say that yes, health is a priority to some extent, but there are other priorities. We just seem don't know what they are. That doesn't necessarily make it acceptable, but perhaps would make it understandable. And I think again, when we talked about a new dawn and a new beginning, we are beginning to see the executive fall back into its old way of working. Where it would concern me is this budget being cooked up somewhere else between specific parties and then being foisted on the smaller parties.
And to be fair to the Alliance Party, to Sinn Féin, to the DUP, it is very easy to get emotional about health because it is life and death. And it's very, very easy to argue for more money for the health service. But the key question is what? To the detriment of what? The police?
Exactly.
To the detriment of children in our schools? So who do you take it from is the question that Robin Swan repeatedly refused to answer this morning.
And that's where a programme for government would help, because, again, if it's agreed, you can see that, OK, we are prioritising this. And, again, in order to give health what they want, at the minute it seems we have to take from elsewhere. But I think there's a few other factors to play in that obviously have been mentioned. I mean, if there is this shortfall, well, what's the executive doing in terms of revenue raising? How imaginative is it being in its use of its assets that it could do? I mean, revenue raising shouldn't necessarily mean putting that pain onto the public. Is there largesse? Is there things that could be cut or sold off within a government estate? And also, what reform can be made of the health service to help the minister himself get by on what he has?
You mentioned, finally, Rory, you mentioned the role of the SDLP as the opposition party. Do they have, as the opposition, does the SDLP have a clear policy delivered to the public as to what they would do rather than just criticising?
I think that if they're going to be effective opposition, that's what they need to do. And I think it
and have
help.
They?
I've yet to see one, but again, I think that's what they need to do. And I think as the budget goes through the Assembly process, that alternative needs to be produced. Again, you look at the South, for example, where Sinn Féin would routinely oppose a government budget. But what they do is they do produce a costed alternative. And I think if opposition politics are to work, it's incumbent on the SDLP to provide that alternative. alternative and for the whole Assembly, if people, okay, are, as you say, individual MLAs are as concerned, is to produce that alternative for consideration.
Rui, thank you. I'm pretty sure the SNP have proposed alternative revenue-raising measures. Dan in Lisburn. Morning, Dan.
Good morning, Stephen.
Morning. Go ahead.
Stephen, I'm going to rename your show. Do you remember that song Boy George has, I'm a Chameleon?
Yes.
Well, you're the perfect chameleon on the radio because you change your spots every day you get out of bed. You said that the DUP, you said that DUP didn't go back to government, there would be deaths, people would die.
No, it didn't.
You did.
No, it didn't.
Look, we're not going to get into here, Steve.
Yeah, but we are going to get into it.
Would people die?
We are going to get into it. I asked the question, would people die? That is a hell of a lot different from me stating something as a fact. So
right,
stop
okay,
putting
then.
Stupid words what in if, my mouth.
It's the same emotional effect on your viewers.
Right.
Otherwise, you wouldn't say it.
Okay. I wouldn't ask a question, for example, rather than phrase something as a statement.
Well, why now...
Could someone sell to this man? Could someone explain to this man what a journalist does when they're hosting a BBC show? Guess what, Dan? You ask questions.
Right, very good. Let me speak and stop speaking over the top of me. Please show a bit of manners. Okay?
Yes.
And I didn't really mean that. Stephen, you said the DUP had to go... You had children on your programme who needed a heart transplant. Illustrating the need for the DUP to go back to the government. And now you're saying they should have got more money. Tell me this, Stephen.
No, I've asked the question in the context of the DUP. You heard us replay today the Sir Geoffrey Donaldson interview. In that interview, that was at the point where he was selling to the country why it was the right time for the DUP to go back into government.
Yes.
And at that time, Dan, which is only a few weeks ago, Sir Geoffrey Donaldson said on behalf of the DUP that there was a parallel process of negotiation going on with the British government and that he thought that more money would be on its way very soon. Now, because Sir Geoffrey Donaldson is no longer leader, that does not mean that there is not a question for the DUP. And it is this.
It was your party position
that there was more money. Where is it?
Well, Geoffrey Donaldson also said, I'm for you as a DUP voter. Geoffrey Donaldson said there was also no sea border. And we saw that fell apart at the same. But I'm telling you as a DUP voter, we didn't want any money involved. We didn't want to get into ransom politics. We wanted the sea border removed.
You haven't got it removed, have you?
Absolutely we haven't. We've been misled. Do you know how emotionally that affects me? I mean, I'm not on here, trying to make a cheap point. I have been very severely damaged emotionally by this whole thing. And when I hear you on your... on the radio, saying one week that the European
asking
the,
questions one week.
Well, it's the best of both worlds, and then and we should get back into Stormont, and now you're telling them we didn't get enough money. They still have the protocol, and you didn't say to the Alliance Party during the protocol about the fact that we wouldn't have had cancer drugs because of the protocol. And yet of all, we're talking about it now, that they don't have enough money for cancer drugs. It was the cancer drugs at the very start which motivated me to phone you, because I am an ex-cancer patient and a cystic fibrosis patient who depended on drugs in our health service, which were originated new drugs in the UK which would have been banned.
I think a question that I am going to ask on behalf of us all, of all the political parties, is the news cycle today consists of the message that this is going to be, and you can apply any of the words that they're using, a challenging budget, dire consequences. Does anyone from within any of our political leadership actually have something which is a solution or an idea as to how we mitigate these dire consequences? Is there any big thinking as to what we could do? Should the Assembly be asking for this budget to be amended in any way whatsoever? Or do we just accept that over the next year there's going to be these dire circumstances? Let's come back now to the serious political situation we find ourselves in, which is there is a budget which our current health minister is telling us will lead potentially to death. There's a proposed budget where he says people who need cancer services, elderly people, vulnerable people will not get the care they need. Dr. Alan Stout, chair of the BMA here in Northern Ireland. Morning, Alan.
Good morning, Stephen.
And yet, while Robin Swan is grabbing those headlines and he's fighting as a minister for his department, you wouldn't expect a minister to do anything less. There are also children in this country, and Paul Given, the education minister, he's hundreds of millions short for what he wants to do for our kids. And no doubt, as you look at other government departments, they could all be making valid, strong arguments of how they are not getting what they need here.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, I think the absolute reality here is we don't have enough money. And I think what we saw yesterday was the reality of the budget, the reality of the political problem, which is, as you well reported over the last number of years, has been a problem. But has also led to the reality of the situation that we're in at the moment and the difficulties that we're facing. And with the budget, it's almost, and with the announcements yesterday, it's almost like an unfinished sentence, you know, because the second part of the sentence, which right now we and our politicians need to be absolutely honest with the public, is this is what you can no longer expect, and actually what you won't get.
And that's what I want to nail from you this morning. Can you be as clear as possible as to what you foresee in terms of what we will no longer get as a consumer of the health service? Unless we can buy it privately, of course, unless you've got money, what is going to disappear?
Yeah, well, actually, I think you yourself summed that up perfectly, you know, just before the news when you said that what we are seeing is the vast difference now between the working class and those who can buy service. And we're going to see that more and more. So, again, let's be very clear. We are not starting from a good position at all. We know the pressures in general practice. We know the ED stories, which are almost weekly now, daily, if we choose to report them daily. And we know the astronomical waiting lists. So what will happen with such a constrained budget is that we won't even be at a standstill position. We will see those positions getting worse, and we will be in no position whatsoever to start the transformation, because some of the things that need to be done and needed to be done many, many years ago, never mind now, are recurrently that low-hanging fruit, which usually and nearly always are the ones that get stopped. And those are the ones that will, in the short term, cost a little bit more money, but will start to make that difference in the longer term.
And thank you for spelling that out, but I want you to try to make this as accessible, as real to people as possible, so that we can have a place in this debate. Services like what? Things like what?
Oh, it's going to be right across the health service. I mean, the entire health service is struggling at the moment. Your access to your GP. I mean, we have very clearly articulated, and we've actually got ministerial support for the additional investment that needs to come into general practice. So your access to your GP is going to struggle. People on waiting lists. I mean, it is now almost futile to.
Why is access to a GP going to struggle? You're all because currently in jobs. None of you are getting sacked or no doctor places are being diminished because of this budget. So why would that get worse?
And again, that's why I say we're at a difficult starting position, because we have that problem as it is at the moment. That is not going to get resolved. That we're not going to see those significant changes. So that access will continue to be really difficult. But access then on referral will continue to be really difficult. Our emergency departments, the flow, the social care, the flow through hospitals is going to be really, really difficult as well, because, again, that tends to be an area that is easy to cut and easy to disinvest from. So we, whenever you have a constrained budget, what happens is you revert to crisis management, and we've seen crisis management year after year after year, and we are going to continue with crisis management.
Is this a fait accompli? Can anything be done to mitigate against this?
It absolutely can, yeah. And,
what is that?
So this is where political philosophy and political priorities are important. Now, my kind of naive political view would be, within a really constrained budget, what we should do is we should focus our resource. And that actually applies internally within a budget, so that applies within the health budget too. And what disappoints me is we've seen small amounts of money, relatively small amounts of money, scattered thinly yesterday, which are going to have relatively little impact. I think with the money that's available, you'd be far better to see big impact in a small number of areas, and that might be health and education, include education as well, and really focus on those. And actually, if the dialogue is correct,
to the detriment of what? Our roads? Then you get into road safety to the detriment of policing?
No, absolutely not, because I think what then happens, and if the dialogue about approaching Treasury and Westminster for more money is true and is viable, I think that has much more impact with Treasury if you go with a very focused ask and you say, we as a political system have prioritised our health and we've prioritised our education and we are short by this amount for justice or infrastructure.
They've been talking about this for months before they went back into the executive. We heard reports of how they were sitting down with whoever it was, I can't remember their name, within the head of the civil services. It was someone that they were sitting down with to look at the finances with a view to if they went back into the executive. They you know, the DUP, one of the leading parties in this country, have said publicly there was a parallel process. We heard that. Some of the other political parties were saying that the strength of being in the executive arguing for more money was the strongest position we had. And the bottom line, there is no more money.
No, and you're entirely right. And that's why I say is if that dialogue is correct. But again, we have to, locally, we have to prioritise what we want to prioritise. And that is quite clearly Robin Swan's frustration, because before the budget, that was the message. That was the message we heard loud and clear as well whenever we met the political parties as the representatives, BMA representatives. And we haven't done that. And health, again, I mean, the two big points with health is, number one, it'll swallow enormous amounts of money and will continue to do if we don't change. Those warnings have been there for years and years.
You might not want to talk about this, but here's another reality, and I'm by no means saying they didn't deserve it. But every time there's a pay rise for anybody in any of these government departments, that's less money for the services.
Well, it absolutely is. Yeah, but again, without staff, you've no service. You know, and that's going to be a key factor next year. And the minister has made that clear yesterday, that he does not have the money to meet any pay awards next year as things stand at the moment. That will be catastrophic to our staff here. We've got to be clear about that now, and that will be absolutely catastrophic to any future service that we have in Northern Ireland.
Alan, thank you very much indeed. Mick Field, the editor of Slugger O'Toole. We're hearing these words like dire. We've just heard Alan use the word catastrophic today. What's the solution, Mick?
Well, I think a lot of what Alan said there, I like the cut of his jib and his naive politics, because it's exactly where we need to be on the health question. You know, if I could just quote Martin McGuinness from October 2016, when Sinn Féin last held the health portfolio, and it's really interesting to think about this in reflecting on what Alan's just said. Change has to happen. And the only question is whether it will happen in a controlled, planned fashion or unfold out of control. Now, we have the answer today. The answer is it's been let get out of control since the last budget, and that was 8 years ago, same year as Martin uttered those words. And we have allowed the whole system get out of control. So whatever the shortfalls of this budget, we have waited 8 years for one. but this one has clearly been put together in a very rushed way. I guess the one criticism I would make is that there's no strategic framework around this that shows how it gets better year on year on year. This is simply a snapshot of what happens after a 78-year political hiatus where no budgets were struck, where some of the back pay is exaggerating some of the reality of the budgets that have been handed around. But moreover, the truth is that the finance minister is the one who's responsible for coming up with alternatives in terms of finding the means to pay for the health service. And in particular, it is her responsibility and her responsibility alone to find more income. Now,
how is it the Sinn Féin minister's responsibility alone? Because do you not think in terms of practical politics, in practical politics in Northern Ireland, do you not think there would need to be some type of executive consensus about revenue raising?
No, consensus is important, but it's really important not to blur the lines of responsibility here. The truth is that the finance minister, it is her responsibility to put together the budget and stand by that budget and take any brickbats that come on foot of it. Now, I'm sympathetic up to a very limited point in that they've had to turn this round on a sixpence. I don't expect this to be an all singing, all dancing affair. You know, it's had to be done also within the envelope of the last UK budget. So the idea that we can negotiate with in future budgets with a Tory government that may not even be there next March is a pure conjecture. But the point is that I would say this, right? How do we solve it? Where do we look? Well, I think instead of looking, as Stephen Farry suggests, at education and ending duplication, which it's clear that certainly the Catholic population of Northern Ireland is not ready for that. That's a pipe dream. We ought to look more specifically at the infrastructure budget. Well, there's a whole bunch of things that could be done to try and release small pots of money in themselves, but things that could be done to really begin to hit.
What is if you're saying the responsibility for revenue raising, in other words, the responsibility for one of the solutions lies solely at the door of the finance minister, Kiva Archibald?
Yeah.
What is the political damage, if any, to Sinn Féin? That here is a Sinn Féin finance minister who is proposing a budget which will ultimately mean rich people will be able to buy themselves out of the problem of soaring waiting lists and pain, and poor people will not.
I don't think there's any enduring damage. If we take the sympathetic view that this was done very quickly, that some of the demands that Robin Swan is quite rightly making, given that all the other parties signalled that health was going to be a problem, given all of the burden that had to be picked up after this eight-year hiatus, the real question for me is, going forward, how is the finance minister going to address that issue that Martin McGuinness himself highlighted back in October 2016? And Michelle, when she, the current First Minister, then the Health Minister, launched the Bengoa report and promised that her 10-year plan, now 8 years old, was going to basically save the health service. They have got to shoulder this responsibility and stop shirking it or pushing it onto a health minister who is quite rightly making urgent demands to sort out an urgent problem.
Mick, thank you very much indeed. On The View last night, John Campbell, our business economics editor, was speaking to the finance minister, Kiva Archibald, and asked where the executive is with the commitment to revenue raising.
We did get some flexibility from Treasury around the revenue raising ask because they wanted it initially over 12 months. We now have 24 months to deliver that within. But certainly the executive is up for looking at how we can do things more efficiently, what ability we have to generate revenue, what borrowing powers we might want to look at, and if there is potential for the devolution of fiscal power. So that's all part of that kind of broader conversation about the fiscal framework.
Lots of those revenue raisers, like water charges or university fees, they were immediately ruled out by by your party colleagues. You have a consultation on your desk around reforms in the rate system, potentially closing off some of the reliefs. So do you still have an open mind to that, or are you just saying I'm not going to do anything?
So in relation to the rates revenue raising consultation, 1,400 people responded to that consultation. So I certainly want to consider their views. As you will appreciate, I have had a lot on my plate over the past few weeks in relation to the set of them.
But it is still possible that some of those reliefs could be closed off to raise more money.
So I will be looking at those, and as part of considering the outcome of that consultation, I will be looking at what the feedback was. I've been clear that I think it's really important that our rating system actually aligns with what we're trying to achieve economically. So Conor Murphy, as Economy Minister, has recently set out his economic vision. And I think it's important that when we are trying to achieve, we are trying to achieve it collectively. So I'll be working with the Economy Minister as well in respect of that. And I think it's important as well that we are creating the type of environment that's encouraging businesses to start up, businesses to grow. And then you have more businesses paying into the rating system, which helps us in terms of the delivery of our public services. But certainly I am open to considering what those responses to that consultation were.
That's the Finance Minister, Kiva Archibald, talking to John. Here's Gary in Belfast. Morning, Gary.
Good morning, Stephen. Stephen, I'm very disappointed in Robin. I think he's a nice, decent man. But if he looked into his own job, a wee place this size, do we need how many health trusts we've got, whether it's five or six? It's the same with education boards. Does Robin know that on these health trusts, there's people in offices getting £100,000 a year? Robin seems to want the extra money for wages. If he cut it down to one health trust for the whole of Northern Ireland and get rid of all these useless people and give it to the staff that do the work on the ground, it would be greater.
I doubt those people would describe themselves as useless.
Well, I don't think they're doing much. If you walk around any hospital, you'll see five or six of them walking about with clipboards and nice suits, and they haven't got a clue about health. They wouldn't tell you what a sore toenail was. Do you know that the beds in the hospitals are outside companies that own them? Laundry is outside. Car parks are outside. The equipment is outside. The hospital bring that on internally
people. They could, but it's a longer conversation well beyond today as to where the efficiencies are or are not, but very well could be from leasing equipment and from using outside companies to supply stuff. Can I just remind you all today that while we are talking about health because of Robin Swan's comments, that every other government minister will be sitting today with very difficult decisions that they could be about to announce to the public about where services are being cut. And I think it was our last call. The caller before last was talking about education. What on earth is Paul Given going to do? So if he's millions of pounds short now, what goes? Is it rebuilding schools? Is it support for children with educational special needs? The likes of the transport that gets kids to school. There will be lots of those services that he will be required by law to deliver. So if you think that through, what he's not required by law to deliver, are we going to see significant cuts in the education services? And our classrooms and the teachers and the support staff, what's going to happen to all of them? John in North Belfast, morning, John.
Good morning, Stephen. Stephen, I'm extremely disappointed with the EUP today. They come out of Hillsborough and Dick Beattie says that the money on offer was the best that they could get. And on it was, the caveat on it was, they had to fend £113 million our money would be held back by the British government. They all agreed not to do the cut, so money will be held back by the British government. But yet they're neither on the radio or on the TV saying that they're short of money. Maybe if they had to put the cuts in, they would have had the money.
Okay. John, thank you. Susan, morning, Susan.
Good morning, Stephen.
Last call of the day. Go ahead, Susan.
I don't think they should put any more money into the health service. I think it's broken and it needs fixed. The Bengoa report, was it 10 years ago we had the Bengoa report? We need to cut down. There are five boards for 1.7 million people. With, and if you counted how many people at the top in those boards, one board would cut back a lot of money. Health is our first priority. And if it's broken and we're not well, we can't work. So I think it should be a first priority for everybody, and they should sit down together in Stormont and fix it.
Susan,
it needs fixed.
Susan, thank you for your call today. We started 3 days ago talking about the budget. I dare say finances and how we pay our way in this country and how much we as individual citizens pay more into this system, which many are saying is now broken and needs urgently fixed, and the consequences for vulnerable people across our society, we'll continue to talk about. See you in the morning.
The biggest show in the country. Listen again on BBC Sounds. Tweet at Stephen Nolan.
Ich bin Lea.
Ich bin Lina und wir machen den Podcast Juice.
Das hier ist Juice und da erzählen wir uns gegenseitig jede Woche eine juicy Geschichte aus der Community, egal ob die jetzt schockierend, peinlich oder einfach nur funny ist.
Zum Beispiel die Geschichte über Raphael, der eine Hodenkrankheit vortäuscht, nur um sein Date im Krankenhaus zu besuchen.
Die Ärztin so, naja, können wir den Hoden auch antackern.
Hört Juice überall, wo es Podcasts gibt. Wir freuen uns! It's spicy, you tell me, yeah.